This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Chinese President Xi Jinping and the president-elect of these United States, Donald J. Trump, had a chat Sunday night. All the appropriate things were said by both sides after the call, but as is so often the case in Sino-American relations, there are layers upon layers of the relationship between the world's two biggest economies to peel back. James Fallows does that in the cover story in the new issue of The Atlantic magazine. It's called China's Great Leap Backward. Jim, it's really good to talk to you again.
Kai, nice to talk to you.
We should say at the outset of this conversation that this piece in The Atlantic was written before the election, obviously, yeah?
It was. We had to come out with an issue that would come out after the election we thought would cover concerns of whoever was the next president. But frankly, I was not expecting, like most people, I wasn't expecting that these would be prescriptions for a Trump administration.
Exactly. So let us back up for a second and reestablish your bona fides, which we have done on this program before. You have spent a good part of the past decade plus either living in China or working there frequently. You have virtually constant contact with people there in the economic and social and political spheres. And you say in this piece that things have changed.
Starting about a year ago, I went through my friends who had been on the China beat for a long time, Americans, Europeans, Asians, Chinese, saying, does something seem different out of China now because of the emerging shape of the Xi Jinping regime? And increasingly, their arguments were that something was different from the China we'd known from back in the Nixon, Kissinger, Chairman Mao era of the 1970s. So that's what I was trying to say. If China was really changing, both internally and externally, did it dictate some different frame of reference from the United States and whoever was its next president?
Refresh us that frame then, if you would, because for 45 years, the American and really the Chinese approach has been, listen, we've got some differences, but we got to work through this together.
Yes. The breakthrough that Richard Nixon and Chairman Mao established, and that I would argue every American president from Richard Nixon through, crucially, Barack Obama maintained, was the idea, number one, that it was better for both countries if they could work as difficult partners rather than being enemies or adversaries. Number two, that it was better for the United States, and this was an important point, if China grew and prospered rather than if it stagnated, because whatever problems a prospering China created for the world, a stagnating, fractious, falling apart China would create worse problems. And number three, there would still be disagreements, but over time, the American assumption was those disagreements would become more manageable. Not that China would become democratic, but it would become sort of more internationalized and part of the world sphere.
And that frame is basically because, especially now in this era of globalization that has accelerated the past number of years, we are in essence one entity, right? I mean, we've got separate spheres of influence and all that, to quote a phrase, but economically and politically and in some ways culturally, we are one grouping.
Yes. And the differences between China and the United States, we could spend the next 10 hours talking about. But, you know, number one, in economic integration, it's almost impossible to find any company in America, in the United States, large or small, that doesn't have an important relationship with China. It could be its supply chain. It could be its markets. It could be the way that non-commercial enterprises like universities are increasingly reliant on Chinese students as part of their population base, their student base, but also part of their international role in the world. The same thing is true in a different way in China, where its connection with the world economy through the United States has been a very important part of its rise out of poverty over the last 40 years or so. And in surprisingly broad realms of international cooperation, the United States and China have done things together that make a big difference. Certainly the most important is climate issues, where if the United States and China, the two major emitters in the world, don't solve this problem together, there is no hope for anybody.
Okay, so let me then read you back to yourself, and we will say once again that this was written before the election, but you said no sane American leader would choose confrontation with China. The next president has no rational choice but to keep trying to make the best of this relationship. And here we have a man who will take over on January 20th, who is going to tear up the TPP, who is skeptical of climate change, and who has campaigned literally on the idea that China is doing its best to hurt us.
I think this will be example number one or, you know, number 10,000 of what we learn or what we can expect from a Donald Trump presidency related to what the way candidate Donald Trump campaigned, because the things that Donald Trump said during the campaign were inflammatory and often grossly misinformed. For example, one of his standard lines in his campaign speeches was that China was artificially holding down the value of its currency. I mean, certainly China manages its currency, but recently has been holding it up, you know, the opposite of what Trump has said. So we will now see, based on the phone call that Xi Jinping and Donald Trump have apparently had, what the path forward is.
I'll preface this last question by saying that you were a speechwriter for Jimmy Carter in the Carter White House, and you end this piece with what in normal circumstances would be a speech, a foreign policy speech that a new president might give as he lays out his vision for the world. And you say in your version of the speech to end this article, so China, here we are. We can do it one of two ways. We can do this relationship the easy way, or we can do it the hard way. We hope to be easy and have cooperation, but we're ready for the hard way. What does that look like?
The hard way, if we assume anything like a normal policy-making universe on the U.S. side with its allies, is saying that for 40 years we have assumed that everybody is better off if China continues to prosper. But if there are signs that that assumption is flawed, we need to prepare for ways to make China's development in ways that are harmful to the world less attractive for China. That is changing the reality in which they operate, whether it's alliance, military alliances in that part of the world, whether it's denying them privileges they would like, as opposed to the sort of outright bluster and lecturing that has never for anybody paid off with China. The question for all of us now is whether that kind of subtle backstage reshaping of realities is even a possibility for the new American regime.
James Fallows is a national correspondent for The Atlantic magazine, has been for many years. His most recent piece is called China's Great Leap Backward. Jim, thanks very much.
Thank you, Kai.